Everybody, welcome to another episode of the Mo Show podcast. Having a little bit of technical difficulties today, but it's a beautiful Saturday morning. Because it's
rude.
Plus, it's a bonus weekend. We had one yesterday, and now we're doing another one today. I think we're gonna take off next week because I got some stuff I need to do. All right, but today on the podcast we have Melissa.
What's up?
All right, and with me as always is Sandy.
Hello.
And Oliver. Yeah, he don't talk much. Anyway.
They can't hear your finger waving, babe.
So welcome to the
or
show.
Your
thanks
thumb.
For coming down, Melissa.
Oh, yeah, no problem.
So before the podcast, we were talking about like conspiracy theories and how sometimes you can kind of go down like these weird rabbit holes, like trying to figure out the answers to all the questions that are really kind of unanswered or like given insufficient answers or lots of evidence to disprove. And then it kind of got us into, like, a little crazy tangent about talking about, like, weird theories that, like, we have. What's this theory that you're talking about with the fourth dimension?
So, it's hard for me to explain it, so if I go in, like, random orders, I apologize. But basically, my idea of how we can get to the fourth dimension is the same type of relationship that the third dimension has to the second dimension. So, when a energy, or for what we know as light, in the third dimension is cast, it casts a two-dimensional shadow. So knowing that, you can say that in the fourth dimension, when some type of energy is cast, whether it's light or whatever, a three-dimensional shadow is cast, if that makes any mm-hmm. sense at all. But you know, if you have like a two-dimensional, say there's like a two-dimensional land and they know left and right, they know forward and backwards, but they don't understand up and down. If you were to take this two-dimensional person and take him up and he went back, he wouldn't be able to explain what the hell just happened. You know what I mean? It would blow his freaking mind. So it's hard for...
That just blew my mind.
Us to... Exactly. So it's hard for us to understand the fourth dimension because it's on this,
it's a different plane
that we can't really describe. So... something else that I was trying to say is that, so the fourth dimension, there's an energy that can cast a third dimensional shadow. And that is kind of like a relationship that we can kind of see snippets of the fourth dimensional shadow. And that's kind of where my idea of ghosts come from.
Interesting.
That ghosts are just shadows caused by the fourth dimension. And energies come in different ways. Like there's the light energy, there's heat energy, there's friction and vibration, which causes sound energy. But we can also think, and those are ones that we can measure and we understand very well because of our world and stuff. But I have this idea that in the fourth dimension, you can also control kind of like an emotional energy or like a time energy or a spiritual energy, things like that, and you can communicate through them. The way we communicate by talking and by sight and things like that, you can communicate more in that type of spiritual, emotional way. And rather than just experiencing it and being all like, what the fuck's going on in my head? What was I going to say? Oh, so my idea about ghosts is that it is just a third dimensional object that has, it's a fourth dimension, whatever, that is a shadow that causes a third dimensional shadow, and the energy source that's causing the shadow is emotion. So that's why when you hear about ghosts, it's always like this terrible thing that happened, and it's from a different time. So that whole transpiring of time thing, and
that's
kind of like my idea of how the fourth dimension kind of works, but it's so hard to like explain it because it's like in this different thing and I have no way to prove it. Yeah. I'm like, how the fuck do I prove where ghosts come from?
It's interesting because I think we've all kind of experienced, especially like I know I have, like experienced like seeing things that you really can't explain on like a real level, or like having like weird experiences. Like, okay, there's this scientist from London, this biologist actually, his name is Dr. Rupert Sheldrake, and one of his theories is that like people, like, no one's ever been able to explain the mechanism of sight. Like, yeah, you have, like, your eyeballs, but when you see things, is it the image that's kind of occurring in your brain? And I'm obviously paraphrasing his, I mean, I've seen his work, but, like, I can't explain it to, like, his level. But from what I read, it was, like, basically, like, do you see things in, like, like I see you sitting in front of me, and then your image is being translated again into my brain. Or his theory was that you actually see things where they are, and you actually are visibly making the image where it is. It's not like it's being interpreted from your brain. It's like more of like a two-way kind of.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not seeing things into your brain. Yeah. And he kind of explains it on by like saying, have you ever seen like a flock of birds or a school of fish when mm-hmm. they're all synchronized and they're all swimming in the same directions? And then all of a sudden at a turn, they can just kind of move to the left and move to the right. Mm-hmm. And then like same thing with birds. Like they kind of fly in formation like in milliseconds. Like they're able to turn direction. And how did all these birds have like that fast of reflexes that they all know to turn left at the same time or all know how to turn right at the same time? You know, that's pretty crazy. And so if you think about it, it's like they have to be – there has to be some sort of like physical or like metaphysical or non – like sort of communication that's going on between each of these birds
yeah.
that to kind of coordinate all the birds to make that same turn at the same time.
Yeah.
And it's pretty amazing. Another experiment that he did was this thing with dogs, right? It was like his dog – you can look this up on YouTube. It's pretty cool. Basically what he had was a owner and the dog. And the owner would, like, she was really close to the dog. And when the owner would leave, like, they had two time-lapse cameras, right? So they're on the same page. And they show the dog kind of sitting in the living room, you know, while the owner's out shopping or whatever. And so, you know, a few hours go by. And then the camera person or, like, the people who were running the experiment said, all right, so we're going to go home now. And so the lady was like, okay, it's time to go home. As soon as she said that, the dog gets up, and this is they're miles away from each other. They're 10 miles away. So they had no clue, but the dog gets up within like seconds of her making the decision to go home, and they entered into a cab. So it's not even like she took her own personal car, like the dog could hear the car or something.
Mm-hmm.
This totally separate, totally unknown vehicle, and the dog was able to interpret like or somehow sense that the owner was coming home, and they went right to the window and waited for the owner.
Oh, wow.
At the exact – like within seconds. Of that decision. Like, how is it that dogs... And I've experienced this too. Like, you know, like when you come home and like your dog's kind of like waiting for you?
Yeah. My dog does that all the time. Like, she sits at the window and she doesn't sit at any other time at the window except for when she knows I'm coming home.
Don't you think that's a little weird that dogs kind of can sense that
maybe,
you're coming home?
But I come home at the same time every day.
True.
But
in this experiment, they just went for a few hours. And like, there was no way the dog would have known. Like, she went to the end of the run an errand. Like, there was no way the dog knew how long she would be gone for.
That's true.
And they were miles away. It's just interesting. He did, like, another one with, like, telephones. And, like, basically, okay, like, if me, Oliver, and Sandy, and somebody else were all going to call you, right before we called you, you were supposed to write down, right when we called you and you answered the phone, you're supposed to write down who you thought it was before they actually spoke. And then over, like, a just by chance perspective, because, like, you would think you'd have, like, a certain kind of random chance
mm-hmm.
of getting it, but he found that like it was a higher than average, like higher than what would be expected.
Oh, wow.
Just by chance that people were able to guess correctly who was about to call them.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And I do think there is some sort of, you called it a fourth dimension, I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
But maybe some sort of like non-physical kind of connection that exists between people that I think like a lot of times we ignored, and like even like ghosts or things like that. Like I try not to rule it out, like,
yeah,
you know. And, like, growing up in, like, Seventh-day Adventist church, they kind of teach you, like, ghosts aren't real.
I know. I feel so blasphemous, like, trying to explain these things. So I'm like, there's nothing in the Bible that states this.
I don't know. Like, it's a good book. I just think that, like...
it's a good book.
I just think that there's got to be more than one way to explain, like, these weird things that are going on. And mm-hmm. honestly, I don't think anybody really knows for sure. So why rule anything out? You know,
yeah,
and like,
exactly.
I feel like a lot of like, you know, what I was taught is like, oh, well, when you die, your body is asleep and that's the end. And like, you wait till Jesus comes and then everybody's going to be happy.
Yay!
But, you know, like in my adulthood, I kind of thought to maybe change my perspective a little bit and think, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what's on the other side. And to be honest, I don't know like why people feel like sort of like kind of real world connections and some like things like deja vu. Things that you really can't explain. Like, I've seen weird ghosts and stuff, like walk by, and I kind of dismiss it as like, oh, my mind is playing tricks on me or like whatever. But I'm pretty sure we've all had like that one thing where like, whoa, did I just see somebody like walk across my hallway or something like that? Like,
mm-hmm.
did I just see like
yeah.
that just kind of, that wasn't there. Like, there's no way there was somebody walking by, but I felt it and I heard it. Or have you ever felt like, here's a weird one. Have you ever been like sitting and like at a coffee shop or at a restaurant by yourself and felt somebody staring at you?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then you look and somebody was staring at you?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. How do you explain that? Like, it's not like there's any kind of like, you know, physical
interaction. There's got to be some type of like, electromagnetic brainwave energy going on. Like that quote I just read, you know, when two musicians are playing a duet, their brainwaves synchronize.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I totally believe that too, you know? And I just think, you know, people are kind of scared to look into it, or maybe we're just too obsessed with like the progression of our people to kind of like the progression and like technology and all that stuff to really look in more into what we can do as like a human and how we interact with each other.
The hardest part is trying to tap into that kind of energy. Cause like, I know me, like I'm interested in like getting into more of that because of that world, because like you can kind of feel that dimension. Like there are ways to kind of get to that point where you kind of can experience it more brighter. Yeah. A lot of it has to do with psychedelics. I think.
Yeah.
See, you laugh, but I'm not laughing.
No, but you're so right.
It sounds funny, but like in all honesty, it's like when you,
I can smell green.
You know, I hear a lot of people. That's a real thing. Shit.
Like, no, I know. I'm so sorry. Crazy. I know. I said I was joking, but I'm totally.
No, people report like I can see. I can like, I can see sound and I can feel color. Yeah, it's synesthesia. Yes.
Yeah, synesthesia. Thank you, Oliver. See, you do need a microphone. No,
but it can't. But these are things that it can't really be explained by like, you know, natural science as it exists today, like the, you know, the physical world. And they're always finding like new kind of things. Like, have you heard of I don't know, man. I just think that like there's got to be a way to tap into that kind of like,
I know,
that world, that like dimension. You can kind of feel it. I was watching this movie yesterday called Enter the Void. Have you heard of it?
No, I haven't.
It's about this like guy, I don't know, he lives in Tokyo and he's like doing DMT. You know what dimethyltryptamine is?
No, I don't. Molecule. I'm like, what's DMT?
This is a highly illegal substance, which I've never illegal. Tried. So, but I've read about it. And I saw the documentary. It's good. DMT, the spirit molecule. It's a good one. Watch it.
Okay.
But basically, it's like the most, it's the craziest hallucinogen known to man. It's super illegal. But it's something that they believe occurs naturally in your brain. It's kind of, it's often, it's like been attributed to like what causes your dreams.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how do you explain dreams? That's another weird one. Like, where do dreams come from? Your mind just firing off, like, neurons and, like, random, like, thoughts and images are coming
and everything's just coming together and you're like, making a story in your head.
Yeah, I've had,
about
like, some
elephants
really,
that can fly and crazy, whatever.
I've had some really vivid dreams where, like, me I too. Can't even explain where they came from. And, like, but I don't really remember them, but, like, I know it was in a different place.
Yeah, isn't your mind actually more active, like, when you're asleep than when you're awake?
Yeah, I mean, if you're getting into like REM sleep and stuff like that, you can see some really stuff. Or have you ever had that experience where like your eyes open and you wake up but you can't move your body? And you
that's like every morning.
Yeah, that's
too. No, but I know what you mean. I've never experienced that, but I feel that way every day when I wake up.
So yeah, man, like these are weird things that like I don't think anyone really has the answers to, man. But it's kind of fun to pontificate about it and how...
I wonder when they will have the answers. Because, like, if you think about, like, 100 years ago, like, people were just, like, so, you know, they thought they were so advanced, like, with the, you know, Titanic and stuff. And we kind of look back at that and we laugh.
No, yeah,
you know what I mean? But,
this.
Like...
Try explaining cell phones to somebody from, like, 100 years ago.
I always think about it all the time. Like, I think about, like, what if Bach were here and, like, I had to explain to him what this electric guitar is and like explain to him I'm playing your music through this thing that's picking up vibrations and sending it through a cable into that box
give Bach a fucking Skrillex album and then see what he says.
Yeah,
you know,
a synthesizer, try to explain what MIDI is to him. Like,
yeah, it's it'd just be crazy.
His mind would have been blown and his hair would have just been like yeah, dude,
probably was after all that sex he had.
Hell yeah. No,
oh,
but
man.
That's what I'm saying. It's like technology's definitely changed, like, you know, the way we, like, kind of experience the world around us a ton. I know, like, you know, I'm one of the, like, kind of late adopters, and I really was like, oh, I don't need a smartphone. What the hell am I going to do with a smartphone, you know? And then, like, now it's like, what would I do without a smartphone? Like,
yeah,
you can,
that's how I
you can surf the internet, you can YouTube, anything you want, any information you need is...
Sorry.
Fail.
It slipped. Sorry.
It's all right.
Anyways.
Was that like a, we're going down a spiral bunny hole, rabbit hole?
The rabbit hole.
That was unintentional. Pac-Man life. Come on.
But yeah.
That Mimi died.
Kind of killed it.
Anyways.
It killed it. I don't even remember what I was saying.
Why not?
Technology.
Oh, yeah.
Smartphone.
Like, now you have, at the tip of your fingers, you can really get any kind of information you need. Like, if I have any questions about anything, I can just search it on the internet. And, yeah, I mean, you're going to find a lot of bullshit up there, too. But you'll see a lot of crazy shit. And, like, I don't know. Especially with Twitter and, like, Facebook. People have posted all
Wikipedia.
Sorts of things. Yeah, you get, like, dude, Wikipedia. Even for my job, like, there's all sorts of stuff I don't know about, like, clinical, like, kind of measures. And, like, I don't know.
I don't know what, like, deep vein thrombosis is, but if I type it into the internet, Wikipedia, boom, WebMD, there it is.
You gotta be careful with Wikipedia, though. Like, one of my friends, I guess just to prove a point to me, because I, like, looked something up on Wikipedia, and he's like, dude, you can't trust Wikipedia. And I'm like, yeah, like, you know, you just look at the sites, make sure that, like, the citation is good and everything. He's dude, like, watch. And he went to the Seventh-day Adventist page, and he wrote, like in a total different, made a whole new section for it. And it was, like, Melissa Nixon's biography. And he wrote, like what day I was born, and that I was, like, a homosexual, and that I rode unicorns, and, like, all this other crazy stuff that's not true about me. And then it was up there for like 2 minutes, but he wrote that on the Seventh-day Adventist page.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Well, it's like anyone can change it. He's
can,
like, point proven, bam.
Yeah, but they have people that check it there.
Yeah, Wikipedia is pretty good about it now. Like, they'll like check for bullshit and like,
well, I know, but I mean, like, obviously that would not have stayed even if he hadn't deleted it,
right?
But how much do the people who check Wikipedia actually know about stuff that they're checking?
I think they look for like your sources and stuff. Like, if you
don't
cite it, then
they're
just
true.
And, like, you know, they just take it off. Like,
the citations.
Credible like sources and sites.
I love Wikipedia. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah,
go Wikipedia.
I find it really useful. If I just need like a quick snapshot, like, okay, how does this have to do with this? And I just read about it. And I'm like, oh, okay, cool. And it's like, move on. It's helped me work. Like, I don't know. It's like the internet's invaluable at this point. It's like,
I know.
How will you live without it?
It's, I know,
first world problems, bro.
Thank first you, world Gore. Problems.
But yeah,
don't say Al Gore never did anything for you.
What do you mean,
Al Gore?
Actually,
Al Gore like was one of the biggest proponent of the internet. Like,
oh, was, okay.
Yeah,
I was like, what does like melting ice caps have to do with the internet?
I saw an inconvenient truth. Good movie.
Oh man,
his name was like John something.
I know, I can't find it.
Oh no!
There's this guy who like he wrote most of the
coding
code for the internet, and he also
like,
invented Unix, which is like the basis of like every operating system.
Yeah. So. Oh, yeah. Computers.
No one cares about that guy.
Why not?
Because Bill Gates is more attractive.
Really? Bill Gates?
You don't remember? Like, Ivana was like in love with Bill Gates. She had like pictures of him like all over her binder. He's like, this guy's so hot.
Really? That's so
I don't know.
Weird.
She's probably just joking around. Showing her, but
she was a weird one.
Yeah,
she had her moments. But, I don't
Bill
know,
Joy.
It's
Bill
just like Joy. this technology age, like this the silicon age, and it's really gonna change like everything. We're just in the beginning of it. It's like the turning point of human history, and it's like it's a really exciting time to be alive, man.
It really is.
All sorts
so
of
much
stuff
that gets invented every year.
The world's getting smaller, you know, and like we're just getting a lot more people on the planet. Like,
I know we're at 7 billion now.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
I feel like that's way too many people.
You know, a lot of people think that there's.
Have
like
you seen Bakersfield? There's like space.
Yeah,
there.
My parents live in California City.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So yeah, like I know, like so much space.
It goes on for miles.
Yeah.
See, living out here in the middle of suburbia, it's like it's
well, Bakersfield is like only suburbia. There's like nothing to do up there.
But see, we have LA. Like,
yeah. Really it's close. Nice that you guys have LA down here. But like, it's funny because people will complain about the traffic in Bakersfield. I'm like,
oh my god,
there's traffic. Like, what traffic? They're like, yeah, like, you know, you have to wait like one extra time to go through a stoplight. I'm like, just one extra time.
You mean it doesn't take you 45 minutes to get to through one light? What
are
you talking about?
Yeah, exactly. It takes me like 10 minutes to get to work on a bad day. You know what I mean? Most times it only takes 5.
Yeah, I'm lucky. I work like really close, so I can just do 10 minutes.
Yeah, I like working close.
Yeah. So you're working in Bakersfield?
Yes.
And how long have you been out there?
I've been there since August, and we're in February. And
for
so
the listeners, what do you do out there? Just that way we can kind of say it.
I'm a music teacher. I teach general elementary music. So I teach 3rd, 5th, and 6th grade, just basic music concepts and things like that, definitions. And we play instruments and we sing and whatever. And then I also teach choir. So I have my choruses and then I have my general music.
Oh, wow.
It's fun. I have a lot of fun.
Do you like doing the choruses or like the music better?
I like both. They both have their parts that like fulfill my musical needs, I guess, because I like talking to, or I like teaching the general music students, you know, about how to read music and about the different music terms and, you know, music history and, you know, world music and everything else that goes along with that and, you know, connecting it to math and English and everything for them. But at the same time, I really love the performance aspect of chorus and, you know, like, hey, we're going to all work together to do this fantastic concert and, you know, you guys are going to do this amazing thing. And I'm going to lead you to it. So I love that.
How important do you feel like music is to like the education of a child? Because like, you know, like when like budget cuts are going down, music and sports are like the first things to go.
Yeah.
I don't think sports is. I think physical
music
education.
And art.
Yeah.
Music
physical
and
arts, education. I'm sorry. Music and arts. There's no physical. Okay. Education. So physical saying, education arts. Is definitely the first one to go, which sucks, but I'm kind of, you know, I'm grateful that it's not music.
Hey.
Sorry. But yeah, then arts are the next things to go. Like in LAUSD last year, about a year ago, they announced that they were going to cut all of the elementary arts.
Wow.
All of them. And they don't have elementary PE. And I mean, that meant all of the art supplies and stuff that were going to go to the teachers to do art projects and stuff like that. That meant all of the music teachers at the elementary level, which sucks because also since they have this crazy tenure thing with them, that meant that elementary teachers who have been elementary music teachers who had been at the elementary level for like 20 plus years were going to take the spots of really good middle school teachers who had also been there for like, you know, 10 years or whatever. But because they had less seniority than the 20-year elementary teachers, the elementary teachers were all going to get displaced. But then, you know, people got angry because, you know, when it comes down to it, music kind of helps with the quality of life. And when you put a kid into school, it's not just about math and English. And it's not just about, you know, okay, we're going to throw some science and history in there too. You really need to develop a well-rounded individual because everybody has their different strengths and their different weaknesses. And they're never going to know what that is if you don't help them with it. And a kid is at school for 7 hours a day. You know what I mean? That's like a big chunk of their life. Cause then, you know, they're sleeping for 8 to 10 hours and then, you know, they're at home doing whatever. And they don't always have those opportunities at home to figure out what they're good at. And, you know, at the same time, mom and dad may not be there or mom and dad are exhausted. If there is a mom and dad, sometimes it's just brother and sister that are there cause mom and dad are off working or whatever, or they're just not there at all. So I feel that music education and physical education and all arts education and every type of education is really important in the schools because everyone needs to know what they're good at in order to contribute positively back to the society.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Cause that's what's really important. You know, if you have all these people who are in these quote unquote dead end jobs, but the only reason why it's a dead end job is because it's not what they can do the best. You know what I mean? And that's what is really stunting the progression of society.
I totally agree. You know, I think if like, you know, more money or more like more was invested into like focusing on like really creating like better thinkers, you know, and like,
yes,
literally that's music and arts is something that's totally different than math and sciences and that it challenges you really to be creative. It really challenges you. Like, yeah, there are ways you can be like creative with math and science, but it takes a little while to gain those skills. But when you're in a music, it's like it's this entire open world that can really force you to like bring something out of yourself that's great. And the one thing I love about music too is you can really work it with anybody. And everybody, music resonates with pretty much everyone on the planet. Like, most people can feel moved by a song. Like, a song can pretty much transform you, your mood. It can take you back to, like, a time in your life. It's like a time machine. It really can do so much to, like, help your, like, inner self, and affects our mood so much. It's like, why wouldn't you want to encourage kids to have that kind of knowledge on how to, like, help create, be creative in their minds and create, you know, change their moods? Because these are things that'll help them in life anyway.
Yeah, because, you know, your brain's a muscle, too. You got to work it out in certain ways. And they've found that, I mean, I could give you so many different examples, but I guess the two biggest ones are, first off, music strengthens the corpus callosum, which is that area between the two halves of your brain that makes the two sides connect and interact. Whoa. And there are some people who don't have a corpus callosum, and they can only use one side of the brain at one at a time. And so they can, like, see a picture, and they know what's going on in the picture, but they can't describe what's going on because that's connecting pictures with words, which are two opposite sides. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
But they can take their other hand, or they can take their left hand, and they can write down what's going on. They don't know what they're writing down, but their hand will write it down, what's going on, and they'll be right about it. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, that is weird. Yeah,
so music strengthens the corpus callosum, which means both sides of your brains are able to interact with each other more. And another part that it strengthens, oh man, what was it called? It's not it might be the amygdala, might be the hypothalamus. Anyway, it's been a while since I've done that research paper. but it's an area of the brain where basically how you react to things, and also what kind of, like, a lot of improvisation is where a lot of improvisation stems off of, like, musically. But it's also the same area of the brain that reading comprehension is affected from, and things like on a higher level of critical thinking, so like calculus or, like, you know, astrophysics or quantum physics, things like that, where it's like really heavy shit, you know what I mean? Like, where you really got to know what you're doing. And when you play music, especially create music, so like compose or improvise, not just recite back what's being told for you to recite, you strengthen that as well.
Right.
So I think music's just important just for the brain workout, so that people can actually learn how to use their brains better.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I mean, really, it's not like, maybe not everyone's like a musician, but it definitely helps, like, if you have a kind of understanding, a foundation for music, it can really help be creative in a lot of aspects of your life. Mm-hmm. And honestly, it's like, I've always noticed that, like, when I play guitar and or when I'm playing whatever music I'm playing, it can really help me just, when I go and do something else, it's like, it put me in a different mindset, and it can really help me, like, okay, how can I tackle this better? And then it'll really change, like, it changes your life. Like, if learning and playing music, and it can, and for kids at such a, like, developmental age, it's important, and it's, like, really awesome that you kind of have that philosophy, so you can kind of translate that into your own teachings as well, and I hope you do.
Yeah, I try to. Sometimes it's really hard to explain that to sixth graders. Yeah, like,
I can imagine.
I'm like, okay, there's this part in your brain, and they're just like,
Hold on, you're talking about your brain. I don't know about this.
They're like, I don't care. So actually, the thing that I tell them the most is, and I always try to connect it to their future, because they have a hard time understanding how it's going to affect them right in the now. And they always want to know, like, how does this affect me in the future? Like, why do I need to know this? And I always tell them, there is no other class that you're going to take. Math won't, science won't, history won't, et cetera, et cetera. Only music is going to help you with listening. And the most important skill that you're going to have in any job is your ability to listen to somebody. Whether it's your boss that you have to listen to, your clients, your customers, or for me, I have to listen to my students, et cetera, et cetera. You have to know how to listen. And music will teach you how to listen. Because math's not going to teach you how to listen. History won't. Science won't. English won't. You know, unless you're, like, reciting or writing down exactly what your teacher's making you whatever. I guess taking notes helps you a little bit. But so I try to connect it to them so in that way. But yeah, they, like I told them about that.
And music
can resonate
with them a lot easier.
Yeah. Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, they have fun with it. I have fun with it. I hope they have fun with it.
Well, we're going to take a break really quick, but we will be right back. Been into music then, because this is something you're pretty passionate about.
Yeah.
How long have you been playing like music?
Well, my very first instrument was violin when I was like 5, and then my teacher was really mean and he like hit my hands and stuff like that, and I'd come home crying because I was 5, you know what I mean? And
what a crybaby.
I know. No, he was white, actually. He was this old grumpy white man.
Jeez.
He's probably dead now, but so my mom pulled me out of violin lessons, and at that same time, my brother and my sister were starting piano lessons, so she threw me in piano lessons. Mm-hmm. And when I was like 12, I was just like, I hate the piano, I hate life, brah, I want to play guitar. And my mom was like, okay. So then I started playing guitar, and I never looked back. But I think the thing that actually really inspired me to play guitar was my third grade teacher, and she's actually a music teacher now. Mm-hmm. She would play guitar for us, and we would learn some songs to help us remember some different things, or because it, you know, is an Adventist school, like for worship and stuff. And like, I just loved that she played the guitar. And so I would, that's one of the things that made me want to start. And my mom would make me and my sister and my brother sing together. So that's why I was in chorale and stuff in high school. And I was only in it for 1 year, because that was the 1 year that me and my brother and my sister could all be in it together.
Crazy. You know what? It's like, I remember, like, you were in high school, you were always playing guitar, and I was like, wow, this girl's actually pretty good.
I know, thanks.
You were...
Bam.
Yeah, because we were all... Well, we were all, like, learning how to play guitar, but, like, everybody was, like, you know, still learning. So we weren't, like, that awesome.
No.
But, no, it's like, you were always fun to play with. I remember we used to jam out, like, to, like, Saves the Day and stuff like that.
Yeah,
like,
Taking Back Sunday.
Oh, yes.
Senses fail.
We sure went in with a bang, so...
Yeah, we did. Yeah. Oh, graduation. That was...
Oh, yes. That was a crazy time.
I know.
I still have, like... You know what? I've let it go since then.
No, you haven't.
No.
The truth is, I really have. Sync.
You but really haven't.
I love the story so much.
I like the story, too. I've mostly let go of what happened.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't let go of how much I dislike the school and dislike the teachers.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. Not all the teachers, because obviously some teachers were very dear to me, but,
Some of them.
I'm just like, I can't believe you're still alive.
Some of them.
I thought you would be smited by now.
Yeah. You know, when we were playing, cause basically what happened was, is that the last weekend of school, we all kind of had like a performance for class night, which is it was supposed to be a designated night for you to perform and do like...
It was for the seniors.
For the
so
seniors,
it's like the senior
class right?
night. And it's like they, you know, basically like a huge, look at me, I'm a senior night, mm-hmm. whatever. And
so everyone kind of wanted to show off like their, like, what's his name, did like a little song on guitar and another bunch of girls sang. And so finally...
And
like,
the predictions? What was your prediction?
Predictions? That was kind of fun.
What was your prediction?
I don't remember.
What was your prediction, Oliver?
I thought it was going to be in a Fast and Furious movie.
Fast and Furious movie? I think my favorite was, what's his name? It wasn't Alberto. Was it Mar? No, it was Alberto. How he was going to be the next Venus spokesperson because he shaved his legs.
Oh, wow. Really?
You don't remember that one?
It's crazy.
I know. And Ivana's, we can't figure out a prediction that's perfect enough for her because, like, that was her joke that year that she was perfect.
Oh, wow.
And, like, for everything, it was just like, I'm perfect. I'm perfect.
Yeah. I just remember my the performance that we had that night.
Yeah.
And like, did you go on after or before us? You went on before.
I went on before you guys. Because Andy and I went on before you.
Yeah. And you got back last.
We walked in together because we were both officers.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
And I was wearing that big green dress that I bought at Goodwill for $10.
You know, like, you guys played first, and then we played, and then the show pretty much stopped.
Yeah, yeah, it stopped, and then Sonia went up there and she did like an apology prayer. No, she did an apology inside her prayer. I was like, wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, sorry, Jesus. I know you don't like rock music, but
oh gosh, that was ridiculous.
Church, we weren't even in church. I know.
The splinter.
Yeah, and we got so much backlash for that. It was like the night. It was the night before graduation.
Yeah.
And we got so much backlash, we weren't even allowed to walk.
Yeah. Now, I thought that was crazy. And not only were we not allowed to walk, and I mean, I saw this because you guys weren't there, but you know how, like, they came around and they did, like, a little, they made us all, like, do 10 seconds to say, like, thank you to our parents and stuff, yeah, and they were going to play it at the graduation. Mm-hmm. They took us out of it.
Wow.
They edited us out of it. And, I mean, not to talk shit about some people, but they kept the students in there who were summer graduates, aka those who did not actually graduate.
Yeah,
so
yeah, it was
and I felt like that was just the huge, biggest smack in the face, especially since, like, my parents were still actually there, and, like, they didn't call our names. They left our chairs on the stage empty chairs on the stage.
That's
so there were six empty chairs on the stage.
That's awesome.
You know,
I was stoked.
And, oh gosh, I couldn't believe that.
I almost enjoy, like, the infamy of, like, not walking. Because ever since then, apparently, like, San Gabriel's, like, no bands at all. Like,
really? Yeah, we created a lot of rules. Like, no blankets.
We did the uniforms.
Yeah, we created the uniforms.
No, that was before us.
No, yeah, I think that was actually my sister's class.
That was, like, in the making, and we just, like, got it. That was, like, our sophomore year, though.
That was our, oh.
Freshman year, there was no uniform.
No, we got uniforms our junior year.
Oh, okay, junior year.
Yeah. I remember because I had, like, my crazy-ass hair sophomore year, where I looked like a man.
Oh, yeah, sophomore year was like, oh, you have to wear a collared shirt.
Like, so a collared stupid. Shirt.
A collared shirt?
Oh, a collared shirt.
Yeah. All the guys that wear collared shirts.
I didn't remember that.
Yeah, I remember that, yeah.
Well, you want a guy?
I have a brother.
I had to buy a bunch of collared shirts, so I knew, like.
Oh, you know what? They did. You're right. Okay. I do remember that now.
You know, it was just, the worst part is, like, I look back on that night, and, like, I remember sitting there and, like, standing there apologizing to, like, people, like, look, I didn't mean to offend you. I just want to show off my, like, my band. Like, we were so excited to play that night. We were so excited mm-hmm. to play because all of our, you know, all of, like, our class always asked because they knew that we were in a band. And, like, but they never came to our shows because they were lazy fuckers.
And it's like $7 a show, and that's like, you know, 3 days of lunch.
We couldn't have made it any easier. We played at a place that was like a block away from school. We couldn't have made it any easier, and still don't. Whatever. Yeah. Anyway, but you know, like, so we were all stoked.
I went
like,
to your shows.
We were ready. Yeah, you did.
I still want a shirt. Do you have any more shirts?
No. Those were lost in time.
They will probably
Damn
end
it.
Up. Like in
some people still have, and I'm still surprised when I see, like, on Instagram or something. I'm like, why do you have that still?
Really? You see it on Instagram?
Yeah. A couple of people still have them.
Oh, wow.
I wonder how much it would cost for me to buy it off of them.
I don't know.
No, I'm not going to do that.
We could just make
I love you guys, but I'm not going to do that.
We could just make, like, a redesign, like, limited edition, like, the Redux.
I don't think it needs to happen. Edition. I think it's one of those things that can just stay as a memory.
Oh, but, you know, you just bring up high school, you know, every week that already has.
Not even. Burn. Not anymore.
Yeah, dude.
I don't.
You don't realize it, but you bring it up, like, all the time. Hmm. But, I mean, go on.
It's okay. Thanks for podcast. You know, yeah.
Well, hey, Oliver's cool. Talking.
Hey.
This is what you wanted, Mikey. Remember, you wanted
this. It's
true. Every time I say something you don't like, remember you wanted this.
Oh man.
I remember that. I remember that feeling of just like disappointed in the morning, and you woke up like not knowing if you're gonna walk, and then you got the phone call.
Oh yeah.
Like, oh yeah, you guys aren't.
And then you got the phone call.
Yeah, that was, I think like the worst part was just like how it was really more of the teacher's decisions than the principal's decisions. Cause I mean, remember I was like there cause I stayed, I know you were there in the morning for Monique's graduation.
Me and Oliver and Moses all went. And then after a while we were like, they weren't going to let us walk. And we just got out of there.
But I was the one that stayed. And so like, I saw the arguments.
Yeah.
And when my mom was trying to convince the principal and some other people that, including
your mom
board
was
members.
Laying it down, wasn't she?
Oh, yeah. And what sucks is that both of our moms actually were board members.
Yeah.
And both of our moms worked to save Pastor Peak.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? And
we
it was just
did.
Like such
even
a big.
As a class and as a school, we all rallied behind him. And like when it comes down to like him kind of sticking up for us, like and for his students that really worked so hard, I kind of didn't feel like the same reciprocity.
I know. I was really. Like I was really hurt.
I don't really think
and
Pastor Peak had like any.
No,
power,
he didn't.
Though. He was
that
like
was
a figurehead.
He didn't really have much decision in it because everybody else was kind of pressuring
but
him.
But it would have been. Yeah. It would have made me feel better if I knew he had like our backs. And like I felt like all the teachers like looked at
I'll
us.
I'll tell
like,
you what happened.
All the teachers kind of like looked at us like, "Wow, you really made a bad decision." And like the way I see it is like, dude, we were playing music.
What
that
happened?
A bad decision.
What happened was the teachers. Brought up the whole thing that happened when he almost got fired.
Canned.
Canned, yes.
Is that a technical
and
term?
They basically twisted it, saying that our moms didn't do enough at the initial decision.
What?
Yeah, that's what happened. And I saw this argument between my mom and Pastor Peak. And he was just saying, like, you've manipulated me, you've lied to me, things like that. And it was so terrible. I know. And I like, I just was in disbelief. I'm like, my mom never manipulated you or lied to you. Like, she's fought for you this entire time. How could you say that? And, like, later when I talked to him and I talked to my mom and I talked to a few other people, it just, I mean, I would finally put pieces together. It's like, wow, the teachers really brought this upon him because they want to see, I don't know what the hell they want to see. They just want a power trip, you know, because
you know, it was
they're bored because they don't teach.
Yeah. If you think about the teachers at San Gabriel Academy, it's like they go to school, they bullshit, and then they go home and then they have like empty lives because they're all like single and have no family.
Yeah.
And it's like all they have is like the kids at school, and like they're not even really teaching for the most part. They're just like bullshitting,
you know what,
and like power tripping.
Yeah, you know what really sucks is that like as a teacher, okay, so we have these things called standards, which are basically the goals that have been set by the national and the state governments that are a required set that students need to meet every year. So you have them for all different subjects. So you have them for math, you have them for English, you have them for history, science, reading, writing. You actually even have them for dance, music, theater, and visual arts. You have them for everything you can think of, physical education, everything. And they are this prescribed set of goals that you are required to meet to be a legal school. We never met them.
Wow.
We maybe met a third of them.
Because we're like a private school, right? Isn't it kind of different?
Yeah, so
schools?
It is different.
So we
but technically, we should have our... They should have had their WASC accreditation taken away because they weren't helping us reach the standards.
Yeah.
And it's the WASC accreditation that makes a school legal.
Yeah, but you know what? Like, I mean, they have a pretty good, like, you know, passing rate for, like, graduates that go on to college. So that's
to Adventist like, college.
To Adventist college.
Yeah.
And the thing that... You know, that's a funny thing. Even though all that shit happened, I still have, like, a scholarship waiting for me on my seat, you know, like to La Sierra University or wherever I wanted to go. And it's like, you know what? I was like, look, I didn't plan on going to Adventist College anyways after. I was like, dude, I'm done with the system. Like, I'm out. I'm going to go where I wanted to go. But I had, like, scholarships, you know. I had scholarships to, like, Washington. I had it to everywhere.
Oh, like Walla Walla?
Yeah. Well, I had all these scholarships.
So
I was a good student. And we were all good students. We were all, like, honor roll students or at least, like, or class officers or like, you know, really involved. And we weren't really that, none of that stuff took into place. It was like one knee jerk reaction that like happened to like,
they
one
were, I really
event.
Think they were just trying to punish our parents.
No, they were trying to prove a point.
And prove a point. Yeah. Because I mean, stuff kept getting a little farther and farther and farther away. Like the year before when they were gyrating. You know what they said for me? They said it was that I did not play the song that was, because first they tried to get at me with the lyrics.
Right.
But I didn't sing the lyrics. Andy sang the lyrics.
So why didn't they let you do it?
Because you were there?
But yeah, because I was playing the guitar.
Well, they weren't.
But
they weren't trying to punish.
They refuted the lyrics.
Yeah.
So then they were like, "Oh, she didn't play what was written on the program," but Joe didn't either. Joe's on the program. It said Joe played "Here Comes the Sun" or something like that, and he did not play "Here Comes the Sun." He played something else.
I don't even remember.
Yeah, I just remember that in particular. Like they were using whatever excuses they could, and they were. They were running out.
See, this is
and they
thing.
Were just trying to prove a point.
Yeah, they were just out for blood.
I don't know
there.
What that point is.
Definitely.
They were just
I still
out for
don't
blood.
Know.
We got our stuff approved because I remember going there. It was me, Oliver, and
I remember that too.
And Sean. We all went and I said, look, I said, I don't remember the teacher's name. I don't care.
Snyder.
But I remember.
Snyder. Okay, there you go.
I loved that guy, by the way.
Yeah,
we played the song for him on acoustic guitars. I was like, when we do it live, we're going to have drums. And that's like what I said. I was like, it's gonna be louder. And he was just like, yeah, whatever. Like,
and then we gave him like all the lyrics and everything too. Right? We're like,
yeah, we gave him lyrics.
It's gonna be clean. Like, there's not gonna be any like profanity or anything.
It was a freaking high school love song. Like, it was like some of the cheesiest lyrics you've ever heard. Nothing.
Whoa!
Oliver wrote those lyrics.
Yeah, I wrote that song. Don't insult my lyric writing
ability.
He's like,
wait, that wasn't
Andy.
Dude,
I had a cheesy guitar line.
Hey, just because your guitar line was cheesy doesn't mean you can insult my lyric writing ability.
I don't remember the lyrics, to be honest.
No. Then why are you insulting me, bro?
I still have some of your lyrics, though, Oliver, when we wrote songs together.
Oh, my God. I hate when people have stuff that I've written.
I still have it in your handwriting.
Oh, can you read that?
Someone has a little nostalgia there.
I do. No, we had fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude. That's why, like, Oliver knocks on me for talking about high school, but it's like, it was such a fun time.
It was.
I had a lot of fun meeting you guys. You guys are all my friends.
I guess not really the actual high school part, just like that age and experience of getting to know one another and play music with one another.
Of course.
Even if we weren't allowed to walk the next day.
Nah, dude. See, but that's the thing. I like the infamy of it. Like, I like not walking because it's a better story than walking. And honestly, like, my real accomplishment for me was graduating college. Like, walking for then, like, really meant something to me.
Yeah, same
really
to me.
I put my heart and soul into that. And, like, that was something that I wasn't forced to do like I wanted to do.
Yeah.
Whereas,
same with
high school, I was kind of forced into that. Like, I was forced to go to San Gabriel Academy. I was forced to kind of take those classes. I never got to pick anything. I didn't get to study what I wanted to study. Whereas, like, college, it's like, that was all me, all my decision.
Yeah.
And it made so much more of a difference for me.
Yeah.
Like, this is something I worked at. It wasn't like, you know.
I hugged all my college professors on graduation day, even like the male ones who I knew were married and like were really distant. I was like, give me a hug. And he's just like, okay. This is awkward.
So awkward.
I'm just like, yay, I'm so happy.
Yeah, I don't know.
It was a great day. That was an awesome, awesome day.
Yeah. I remember just walking off that after getting your diploma or whatever, that little like certificate of completion of graduation program. They gave you. I remember walking off and I was just like, wow. Like,
I know. I was so happy.
This is it. I'm done.
Yeah. College graduation was like pretty whatever for me.
Really?
Yeah. I was like depressed like the whole like last year of college.
Really?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Why?
I'm not going to talk about this on the podcast. No. I suffer from depression.
Was this PC?
Yeah.
Was I at your graduation?
Yeah. Wait. No. Wait. Were you? Maybe.
What year did you graduate?
No. You were there for Kyle's graduation.
Did
and
you graduate after Kyle?
Yeah, the year after.
Oh, my bad.
The year after?
Kyle graduated
or 2 years
year
after.
He was a super senior.
Oh, yeah. I was a super senior, too. So, the year after.
Yeah, you know, they say it's like a 4-year degree. I don't believe that anymore, dude.
Music education is not a 4-year degree. It took me like 6 years.
Yeah?
No, actually, it took me 5. But like with the credential and everything, it took 6. But like, I mean, it was 5 plus winter classes, plus summer classes, plus, you know, 16 unit semesters.
You gotta make them up where you can.
It was
crazy. The school system's all messed up right now. Like, you can't get any classes. You can't get into colleges. Like, a lot of them aren't even accepting applications. And it's especially on the undergrad level, it's like really, really tough.
Oh yeah,
master's school is a little bit easier, but undergrad level is just like it's ridiculous. And a lot of people like do the community college route because it's like more expensive, it's more affordable. But then you end up getting in gridlock.
It's not
You get gridlock, and you end up taking twice as long or three times as long finishing the same amount of classes that you would do in like 1 year in an ideal world. But, like, you still can't get any of your classes, so you end up having to take electives just to be able to get on a priority list. and you take electives for like a year just to get on a priority list so you can take the classes you actually need.
It's like, I've been in community college for like 5 years now, and I still haven't been able to get any of the classes that I need to get into a nursing program.
Oh, like, wow.
It's like, I need, like, the science classes are almost impossible to get into because they're cutting down classes. They're cutting the amount of classes they have and the amount of people they're allowed to have in the class. And then they also give priority to whoever's been there the longest or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, I'm like 2 years away from getting into a nursing program when I should have started a nursing program like 2 years ago.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's like, it's really crowded and crap.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of students who are in community colleges that don't need to actually be there. You know what I mean? And I know that's a really controversial thing to say, but not everybody is supposed to go to college.
No,
you know, I was saying earlier, like, you know, everybody has their different strengths and weaknesses, and you really have to find that. But a lot of students are just so pressured, go to college. They have no idea what the hell they want to do.
I'm a little bit ambivalent about that because I've kind of two ways of feeling it. On the one hand, I feel like a lot of people are like that, where like they really don't know what they want to study. So they go to college and they take that first year and they're like really walking around, like taking GEs that they have no clue what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And it's like, dude, why are you wasting your time? If you really don't want to be here, you really don't want to do this. Don't do this just to like make it, you know, just to be there.
Well, it's like you get a lot of pressure from like your parents, and especially if you don't have money and you can't move out on your own and you're living with your parents. Then it's like really hard, and like especially if they're gonna like pay for you to go to school, then you're like, well, fuck no brainer, I'm just gonna go to school.
Yeah,
yeah, you know?
And that's true, and I feel like a lot of people get trapped in that, which I understand that, and that's what I did too.
But it would make more sense for them to at least take classes of things that they might be interested in, so they can find what they like. Exactly. But a lot of times they're like, I'm taking math and English and history because it's on the IGETSE form, and I gotta take that to transfer, and I guess I'm gonna transfer. You know what I mean?
But then also I feel like there is those people that, like me. Like, when I went into college, I started as a bio major. Mm-hmm. And, dude, I hated being in the lab. Like, it sucked. Like, and that's
how I was. I was a math major. And, like, I looked at my teacher, and she looked like she hated her life. I'm like, I can't do this for the rest of my life. And then I went to a music class, and I was like, oh, they look like they love their life. Oh, hey, this is awesome. So I stuck with it.
Yeah, and that's what you do. You have to find what you love, and that's, like, a hard thing. But I stuck with it, and I was just like, biology's definitely not for me. So I kind of got out of it, and I was like, I don't even know what the hell I'm going to do. So I kind of picked a random thing on the page that sounded like, oh, that might be cool. And it ended up being something that, like, I was like, probably the best accident decision I made. And I kind of just kind of fell into it. But I loved it. That's a public health major. It's like, it started to resonate with me. It's like, this is where I need to be. This is my niche. This is what I was meant to do.
Like,
this is what
I was meant to study. Students need to be able to find that before they get to college. And I mean, not everybody's going to be able to actually know themselves well enough to do it. Do you think
that the system is set up correctly so people can find that?
No.
How would you improve it? How can you get kids inspired to like pursue like things that they're actually talented and gifted?
You expose them to a lot of things like while they're young.
Yeah, exactly.
Art and music and physical education. Like, stop cutting classes that can help produce more creativity and more like, I don't know, more opportunity for them to discover new things.
Yeah. And another thing is that they're so focused on just test scores. Because as I was saying earlier, with the standards, that's the set of goals that they are required to meet. And the way that they check that is by test scores.
Right.
You know? And so teachers have just learned to teach to the test. But not all students are actually good test takers. But that's what the government is using to see if the teachers are doing their
job. What would be a better way to measure
that?
Which
is, I think, is a horrible thing to do. Yeah. Like, that is not how you test a teacher. Because some students are really good at taking tests. And they could be in, like, a class with a horrible teacher. But you would never know it because they do really good on tests. And they do really good on the standardization. And so these teachers get tenure and they're staying there. And it's just like, but sure, these kids are doing good, but there's other kids that they're just crushing.
Yeah.
They're just crushing them, and it turns them into, like they just don't develop, and they give up. They give up in school, and they don't try, and they're, like, always going to be at the bottom of the class.
And the government, they use those tests to, like, give funding to schools, and it's like, okay, if you're a kid, like, in a bad neighborhood, and, you know, you go to school, and then, like, you know, you go home, and your parents aren't there, or whatever, and, you know, it's like, and you don't see, like, the importance of school. And it's like, okay, you're probably not going to go to a school that has good funding, and you're not going to have opportunity. But if you're, like, in a suburban area,
but not
you know,
just that, teachers hate to work in bad schools, so they even have worse teachers, if that makes sense.
Oh yeah.
But so yeah, it's like even worse. It's compounded. It's like, and they have, since they have less funding, they have less opportunities. So it's the schools that are in bad areas that have less physical education, have less music education, have less opportunities for other things. And so they hate school even more. And it's just like this cycle of hatred and terribleness.
Yeah.
That's not a word.
I was watching. I know. And you're a teacher?
Yeah, I know. Sorry.
I was watching this documentary about, like, you know. Yeah. Okay.
We cut off Oliver. Oliver, keep going.
And then it sucks.
No, I was watching this documentary, and it's like, honestly, this documentary literally got me teary-eyed. Like, this is like probably the last time I cried. Oh,
yeah. Is that Waiting for Superman? That one?
Yes, maybe.
Oh.
Did you see? I don't know. Maybe. I think that's the one, though.
Okay. That's a really good documentary. I cried on that one,
It was
too.
Like this little girl, and she wanted to be a doctor. She's like 6 or 7.
Yeah.
Oh, you saw it?
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
So, you know what I'm going to say then. And she's, you know, she's there. And she, like, has her heart in getting into this charter school. And she's a student in East L.A. And, you know, all the schools out there, like, she's limited. Like, she's a really smart kid. You can hear this little girl talk. She's so young and yet so bright. She's a bright kid. Like, I felt for this girl. I was like, dude, this girl needs to get into this school because this school offers her a better opportunity to get to a college. And, like, even at that level, that's like their, you know, what they do is like, it's a charter school, which is basically, it's a privatized public school system. But the way that they get into that school is a drawing.
That's a lottery.
Like, yeah, it's a lottery. And like, it's like, how can you leave like that up to chance? Like, your kid's future is like hanging in the balance here. There's like, it's either a tract to help this child succeed in life, or a tract to help this child. That this child is inevitably doomed to go through a system that's proven to be a failure.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, you have this poor little girl. I mean, yeah, you could kind of give the argument, oh, well, she picks herself up and from her own bootstraps. Like, come on, dude.
As a society,
we need to facilitate this. But I feel that I felt so bad for this little girl because she goes, and, like, these charter schools, the way they work, if you don't get in within the first couple years, they won't accept you because they want to go through the whole program. You can't just, like, jump in on the first grade. You have to, like, start either, I think it's first or second grade. Mm-hmm. And after that, it's like, if you're not in by third grade, you're not getting in. And then you're stuck in that school system. But if you get into this charter school, it's like you can go to a better high school. And then you can get into a better college. And, like, they have a higher success rate of college transfers. So, but then this poor little girl, like, she didn't get in the lottery. And so she used to just see her, like, walking out of this room with tears in her eyes. And, like, her parents, like...
No, you know, she wasn't. Was she crying? She was being really strong.
Oh no, she was trying, but you could tell, like,
she was crying on the inside. Yeah,
you could just tell, like, she was just ready to break. Like, she has only
she
one.
Just,
more,
like, I'm
she only
than
had one
to
more
cry,
shot
but
after
this
that.
Is terrible.
She only has one more shot after that to get into that school. Otherwise, she may not get in. And obviously, you know, the documentary ended. I hope she got in. But if she didn't, it's like, how can you let a little girl who has, like, aspirations to be a doctor one day, to be, like, somebody who can help and care for people? Somebody who really is just, like, truly inspired and truly wants to learn in an environment that promotes learning, and deny her that based on the fact that her number wasn't gold.
Yeah.
And it's like, I know, like, life is kind of a lottery as well, too. Mm-hmm. But, like, we should have the resources to, like, accommodate, like, willing students.
Yeah. Well, the biggest resource that education has right now that it's not being utilized is actually just the teachers. You know, because it's the teacher that makes the school great. You know, I mean, I went to Cal State Northridge because they had great teachers. They have a great guitar program because they have great teachers. They have a great music program or music education program because they have great teachers that run the music education program that create opportunities. You know what I mean? Other schools didn't have it. I mean, I applied to other places too, but Northridge is what I wanted because they had all that greatness there, and it was the teachers that did it. It wasn't just some manifestation of, you know, oh, it's because it's Northridge and whatever. And at some point they were the best in technology. Susan. you know what I mean? It's porn capital of the world.
Really?
yeah, the Valley.
Yeah, the Valley.
San Fernando Valley.
I don't know how they have
I knew three porn stars.
Did you?
Yeah, in the music department.
Nice.
Three of them.
Were they nice people?
Yeah, they were really nice people. And it's like, you know, they're just doing it just to, you know, get through college. But anyway,
I'm sure.
But a lot of the teachers that they have now, unfortunately, they get burnt out You know, we talk about how like they're just bad teachers and et cetera, et cetera. But for a lot of them, it's just at some point they were a good teacher with bright eyes and, you know, just wanting to change the world just like everyone else. Something happened. You know, it has a lot to do with, honestly, as we were talking about earlier, power tripping, because it's like they just get constantly denied over and over and over again, either by their principal or by parents or by other administration, whether it's the district. They only see so much progress in their students, and it kind of puts a damper on them. And some teachers are able to overcome it, and some teachers aren't. And some teachers just don't care anymore.
Teachers are, it's really one of the hardest, like, jobs.
Yeah. I seriously feel like I've aged 5 years in the last 6 months. Like, right. I look at my skin and I look at like the bags under my eyes and I'm just like, oh my God, I look like I'm 30. Wow. You know what I mean? And I'm like, I'm already looking into like different anti-aging creams and stuff. I shouldn't be doing that at 24. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, it's so exhausting, but at the same time, it's so fulfilling on the inside for me. And it's to make sure that you can still keep that passion going. And another thing that makes it really...
What does make you keep that passion? How do you do it?
For me, it's just seeing the kids' eyes light up and to understand finally what the hell is going on. And to be able... I mean, as a music teacher, obviously, for me, it's to... My main goal, you know, besides the standards and everything, is to help them be able to describe music accurately rather than just like, I like that cool drum rhythm thing. Is that a beat or is it pitches? I like they don't know. So yeah. Being able to help them be able to describe that and keep track of what they're listening to, but also to help them to be able to create on their own. And when I actually see them creating stuff on their own and their eyes lighting up, like, hey, I made this. That is the coolest experience for me.
Can you tell me about like one of those times? Like,
as dorky as this sounds, a lot of my students, even though they were in sixth grade, they didn't understand how to read and write rhythms or how to perform them either. And,
it's understandable.
Yeah. So like even simple, like a quarter note, quarter note, quarter note, two eighth notes or whatever, like they couldn't grab onto it and they couldn't understand how they're supposed to say it. And I use a simple method called the Kodai method, which is just a set of syllables that they use. So for instance, a quarter note would be ta and two eighth notes would be titi.
Dude, I started learning that last quarter.
Really?
Yeah.
So ta, titi, ta,
yeah.
Ta.
I had like a yeah. Sight singing class.
Yeah. Oh, it's rhythm, so much fun. I love reading. It. And so doing all that stuff and seeing them to be able to do it. And then I was also, and not a lot of music teachers do this, but I make my students write right. as well. Like they have like little notebooks and stuff. And I have like a writing prompt for the day and they write down whatever they need to write down for the day. And at the beginning of the year, I was focusing a lot on, different rhythms and how you read rhythms, read pitches and things like that. And at the end of every lesson, I would also have them make them write their own set of rhythms. So I would let them write it in whatever order they wanted. And then I'd put it on the like overhead projector. It's not an overhead projector. It's a document camera that's put on a projector now because yeah. it's all fancy.
Technology.
And so I put it on there and when they saw the rest of their classmates performing that rhythm that they wrote, they just would get so excited, even though it's just quarter notes and eighth notes. It's like the most simple one yeah. in the world. And it had absolutely no flow. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it wasn't like compositionally exquisite or anything,
but, how did it make
but they were
feel?
So excited about it. Wow. They're like, hey, I wrote that.
Yeah.
That was me. And now all of you guys are doing it. And to see them so excited, and they all wanted to participate. Every single one, even the ones who were saying like music's stupid, those ones wanted to do it too. You know, and it was just like so.
You challenge them to be creative,
exactly.
And that's the part that I love so much about music is it challenges the creative mind. And like music is so related to a lot of different things, like writing music. Like you can write lyrics to music, which will help you improve like your English kind of skills. Mm-hmm. You can, and music itself is mathematical.
Yes.
It's very mathematical. You have
to
have
third grade teachers love it when I start talking about like the different rhythm durations, but like you're teaching them fractions. I'm like, yes.
You
love
exactly
me.
You learn like certain things. Like you learn like how much a step is and like literally at some point, computers may be able to make music just because, like, of associations between notes and, like, how, like, uh-huh. how, like, they kind of flow. I mean, you really can never take, but you can't really place human creativity. And it's so amazing, like, you can kind of formulate a song to do exactly what you want it to do. It's like just mm-hmm. creating something from the ground up, and it's in the most purest form. And it's that's awesome that you teach your students that way.
I know. I'm really excited about it. I really do feel like I have the best job in the world. You know what I mean? And I feel like it's so important to be able to show students how to express themselves, especially in a positive form. Because you see all these different people doing all these negative things. And they're, you know, they're doing out of self-expression and whatever, you know, like they're yelling at, you know, fighting and whatever. And they're beating each other up and, you know, they're doing it because they're so angsty and everything. And it's like, you can find a positive way to take a negative, what's it called? Who's calling me? You're a jerk. Okay, sorry. I heard the buzzing and it was annoying me. So you can find ways to take negative energy and turn it into something positive, something constructive, something that somebody else can understand, and that can also help them.
Yeah, totally.
You know what I
totally
mean?
Totally relate to that. Because when I was in high school, like there was so much like shit going on in my life, and like if I did not have the drums, I kind of think that I probably would have killed myself.
Yeah.
Like because I would have like a totally shitty day, go to school, take all this shit from the teachers, and I'd like get home, go to my drum set, and just, like, beat the shit out of them for, like, 3 hours, and then I was good.
Yeah, and that's how I felt like with guitar, or, like, writing music on my own, like, you know, when I write my own songs and things like that. Or even when I go, you know, I go see a show, I go to a concert or whatever, and I'm able to get into the crowd with people and be a part of this group of people that just...
We're all enjoying the same thing.
Yes, exactly. Dude, and I'm seeing the band and I'm listening to their lyrics and I'm like, dude, I know exactly what you're saying. And I, you know what I mean? It's such a nice release from all this shit we have to do.
Yeah.
And like all the crap that just goes on in our heads. And I feel like if we had to just hold that in all the time, it would just destroy us. And kids don't know how to release that.
No.
You know, they're not taught that in school. And a lot of times parents don't care to teach it to them. And we think, you know, we kind of pass off the responsibility. You know, the parents should teach it. The teachers should teach it. You know, the kids need to just figure it out for themselves, whatever. And like, I think our society would benefit so much if we could just teach our kids from a young age how to express themselves and how to take any energy that they have, whether it's a positive energy or a negative energy, and use it for something constructive.
Yeah.
You know, and we'd be able to fix so many problems at the same time, you know?
It's really true. I mean, going back to what you were kind of saying about, like, you know, like, if you're depressed, like, sometimes just coming home and playing the drums, like, will help, like, change out, like, that whole mood. I mean, it's true, man. Like, honestly, like, this has just happened recently to me, and I haven't told anybody about this, but might as well bring it on the podcast, is that for a whole year, I was, like, bummed, man. I was, like, in the worst depression of my life all of 2012. And, like, I remember every day just thinking of just, like, hey, you know what would happen if I just ceased to be? What if I just didn't exist anymore? And, like, almost borderline suicidal thoughts. And I think it's, like, it was so depressing. And then I started playing it on band and music. And, like, all of a sudden, like, my attitude started to change. Because I wasn't doing anything. I was just working all day and living, like, this, like, kind of a mundane type of life with no creativity. And when you rob that of people, it does affect your physical and emotional state so much. Like, people need creative outlets. And I think music is one of the things that's beautiful about it. Music and podcasting really helped change my entire life. It probably saved me. Because I was just feeling so shitty every day. And then, you know, once you start to be creative, it's like, oh, wow, like, I have something that I really enjoy to do. And I love to do, and it puts, like, you put your heart and soul into it. Yeah. When you're putting that kind of energy into something, it's, like, it changes, like, your whole, like, actual state. So I could totally relate to what you were saying. And I was, like, I feel the kids are, like, especially, like, in high school especially, but even in the younger ages, like, they're very emotionally driven. Like, you know. And
God, some kids go through such crazy crap. Like, I have a student. I'm not going to state names or even schools or anything, but he has emotional disturbance, and when I mean, I knew that he had emotional disturbance, but I never really found out why. And then a couple weeks ago, a fellow teacher told me that, I mean, this kid, I teach elementary school, and told me his he's basically being raised by his older brothers. His mom's not around because she's a trucker. Father's not around because he's in jail. And he's in jail for sex trafficking. Or people trafficking, or whatever you call it. And
human trafficking.
Human trafficking, thank you. And he was there when his dad got arrested. And because his mom was out on the road, he actually had to stay at the police office for 3 days.
What?
I know. Wow. It's crazy. And this kid, he can be the sweetest kid at times and just so loving. And then there's other times where I'm just like, what the hell did you eat this morning? Because you are just like so absolutely insane. You are being so rude and so mean, just mean hearted. And I mean, he just goes back and forth. And I'm like, this kid needs to find out what he is good at. And he needs to figure out what drives him. Because obviously, you know, Big Brother giving him clean clothes and giving him food isn't satisfying the fact that dad's in jail and mom's never there because she is a trucker.
Right.
You know what I mean? And he needs something. And I mean, I don't know if it's music. And I don't know if he knows what it is. But... And I don't know if he even knows how to properly let out the frustration that he has. But the only people who are going to teach that to him are his teachers. Because mom and dad aren't there. And Big Brother probably doesn't understand what to do it. Because from what I understand, Big Brother's not that old.
Well.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, when you put a child into like a situation like that, it's like, it's so hard. It's so hard for them to deal with that on an emotional level and on like a reality, because that's their reality. Every day, that kid's gonna have to live that way. And it's like, can you give it all to the teachers to inspire him? Like, is that like, this kid is obviously like missing something like in his life, and it's just, how much can you do?
Yeah. And what sucks even more is like, the school that he goes to is a Title I school, which means that it only performs at a certain level. It performs at a lower level. And he's definitely a lower performing student. And they receive additional funding because they're lower performing. But at the same time, they still don't have as many opportunities as other schools would, because a lot of those opportunities are actually started by parents. You know, parents who are able to stay at home.
Parents who are involved.
Parents who are involved.
Oh, who do like fundraising and stuff like that
before the school. Yeah, things like that. And that school can't do that because a lot of the parents are not there.
Right.
You know? And it kind of breaks my heart, because it's like, these are the kids that need the opportunities more than the other ones, because
they have
the rich schools
that care.
Yeah. Like the rich schools, it's like, even if they didn't have music in the school, they have private lessons.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Here, the only music that, or, you know, for these kids, the only music that they get is the 40 minutes that they get with me every week, you know? Or,
so
you know what I mean? Or the only whatever is the only little bit that they get at school, because they don't have that at home. And they don't have any other way to get to it. And, you know, unfortunately for some of these kids, they never know what they're good at, because they're never given that opportunity. And unfortunately, they don't have teachers who care enough to figure it out, because these kids are a paycheck to them, rather than these kids are a human being who need to figure out what
the hell's
going on.
Do you feel like that, like a lot of teachers view it that way?
Unfortunately.
Wow.
I mean,
isn't it supposed to be about the students? And like, isn't it all?
Yeah,
about...
I mean, to an extent, they do care about the kids.
Or are they just overwhelmed?
I think for some of them, they might be overwhelmed. You know, especially if you have 35 kids and you have to watch with them.
How difficult is it to manage 35 children?
It can be pretty difficult. What really it comes down to is you setting the expectations on day one and making sure you have every little detail in line and you being on top of them constantly. Because as soon as you start slipping, those kids get through those little loopholes. And once they're through that loophole, it's done. You know what I mean? And it's just after that, it's like,
what do
you
mean by loopholes? What is that?
Like, if I were to tell the kids no talking, or whatever, and or no talking, or, you know, raise your hand to talk is actually what I say. I don't say no talking. I say raise your hand before you speak, so that we can speak one at a time. We can all hear each other. You know, I kind of try to put it in a positive light, because they like that stuff more. As soon as I respond to a kid who has shouted out something, not when I'm talking, maybe I'm writing something on the board and they're asking me a question, but they didn't raise their hand, As soon as I respond to that kid, that tells everybody else in the class, I don't need to raise my hand either.
Whoa.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
No, it is. And like, so,
yeah.
So you have to be on top of them.
I just broke that shit.
Yeah. You have to be on top of them that much. And I think that's what the most exhausting part about it is. It's not actually executing the lesson plan, because the lesson plan is easy. It's that classroom management portion of it. Especially when you have 35 kids.
How do you stand between the line of like classroom management and power trip? Because that's a tough line to
really walk. That really is. And I'm going to be honest, I have a really hard time with that. I mean, like, there's some times where I'm just like, I want to, you know, just tell these kids to shut up. And like, I want them to just be like, write this down, just repeat after me, and just get this in your head. And then there's other times where I'm just like, yay, we're having so much fun, and you know, things like that. And it's a really fine line to walk. And what it really comes down to is just keeping in your head why you're there. You know, I'm here for the kids. I'm here for the kids. I'm here. They're not here for me. I'm here for them. Wow. And keeping that in your head is sometimes tricky, especially, you know, for some teachers who get really burnt out and things like that. And I think one of the reasons why some teachers get burnt out is they get started. Okay. Well, I was reading an article in the LA Times about, the success rate of certain teachers. And they found that pretty much after year three, or was it year two? I forget. After year two or three, you're kind of set on how well you're going to make a child progress. Mm-hmm. By the way, I think that's how teachers should actually be rated, on how well a child progresses, not necessarily on their test scores, you know? So it's like, how well did the child improve?
That's such a hard thing to measure.
Over the year. Well, actually, it's not that difficult. You just have to, it's not easy. It's not simple as a test score. You know, you actually have to make a portfolio. You have to show where he was at before and where he was in the middle and where he's gone at the end.
As a student, like, some teachers trying to show, like, the improvement kind of method of, like, when I was, like, in parent-teacher conference, like, I remember, like, I'd sit there and, like, watch the teachers kind of show, like, okay, this is where he was in the beginning of the year. This is where he's at now. And I didn't understand it then, but now I totally see what you mean.
Yeah. And so I think that's what's more important, is that we show the progression. Because even if a student, for instance, say you have a sixth grader who's at a grade 3 reading level. If by the end of the year he's at a grade 5 reading level, he's still not technically up to grade level. But he's got 2 years of improvement there.
Wow.
You know, which is awesome. That's amazing that he's got 2 years of improvement in 1 year. But he's still not technically up to grade level. And so that teacher's still going to get dinged, because if it was just a test, because you know, they're not.
People develop at different rates. You know, it sucks because you have to, like, you'll try to standardize, like, kind of a learning curve. And really, it's like people all have their own path to live.
Yeah, right? There's all sorts of, like, factors that add into, like, development too, like economic factors and stuff like that. Like, if you are from a poor neighborhood, you're not going to develop as fast as somebody that's from, like, a rich neighborhood and that has parents that are going to, like, have the money to give them, like, extra, like, after school activities and stuff like that, you know?
Right.
So, of course, they're going to progress at different, you know, speeds.
Mm-hmm. And not to mention that, like, the schools are kind of organized that way. Like, you know, the better, the more money, like, a neighborhood has, like, the nicer the school will be, and then the better the students will be. But, like, it, like, totally segregates, like, those that live in lower income, you know, neighborhoods.
Yeah.
And, like, your Title I schools, that really, they're not going to be, they get a little more money because they're performing at a lower end, but still they still have enough to, like, reach the students in a way that could provide them with a lot of the extra stuff.
And then a lot of times teachers find out that they're a Title I school, and then they don't either want to accept the job there, or they have a job offer somewhere else that's not a Title I, which means that they are a better performing school and it's easier
to
teach students.
So the better teachers are, like, encouraged to go to better schools. They don't want to
go
to better schools.
No, exactly. And the thing is, those kids need a better teacher. And that LA Times article that I was talking about also mentioned that they typically shove tenured teachers to the honor students. So someone who's been teaching a long time gets to teach the honor students, which makes sense because they're more well-behaved. You get to do more projects with them. And it's kind of like a reward system for the tenured teachers, because you get to have more fun. It's more relaxing.
And
even though you're doing more projects.
You get, like, the brightest students.
Yeah. And so they're easier to work with, et cetera, et cetera. But the inexperienced teacher. Yeah,
the ones that need those kind of teachers.
Exactly. And so the inexperienced teachers are being shoved at the remedial levels, but those are the one, those students are the ones who need the experienced teacher. And so it's like flip-flopped everywhere for the fact that there is convenience here. And,
yeah, the system's so, you know what I mean? How can you break through like that kind of like, you know, split like in the system? It's like, it's just so hard to inspire like a teacher mm-hmm. when the incentives are in the opposite direction.
Yeah.
It's like the system is all sort of kind of turned upside down.
Yeah.
Whereas like the lazier teachers who can actually get tenure end up on these bottom level lists and they end up holding on to these jobs in places where they don't care. I've seen videos of teachers reading the newspaper with their feet on their desk and the kids sitting there waiting for it to be taught.
Yeah.
Waiting for
class to be taught. And I think honestly where some of the problem comes in is actually the administration. It's not necessarily the teacher's fault because the teacher goes where they're assigned.
Well, there's a lot of bureaucracy union kind of like life that like causes a lot of, you know, bias and like things mm-hmm. to be held. I'm anti-union, but I definitely think that there's something wrong when you got teachers that are lazy and not teaching their kids, not being inspired, and not and especially with young minds. Like these are the people who need to be inspired. These are the people who need to be pushed and creative, to push to be creative and to push to be interested and to love going to school. Yeah. And it's so hard. Like, there's like a joke I heard like earlier. It's like, you know, like when you're a little kid and like you're so excited to go to school,
uh-huh.
and then you get to school, and you're like, damn it, how long do I have to be here? And they're like, 17 more years.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's like, but that's not the way learning should be. Learning should be fun. And it took me such a long time. Like, I didn't find it until I hit college, really, like how exciting learning was.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's so hard to get inspired when you don't have teachers that inspire you.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I think really the only extremely inspiring teacher that I had in high school was Ozzy Navarro. Because, he took physics and he just made it hilarious. You know what I mean? Or he just, you know, like, he'd be like, we're going to learn about projectile today. And in this example one, we've put Grady in a cannon and we have to shoot Grady across the Grand Canyon. And so it's like, everyone's like, yay, we're going to shoot Grady across the Grand Canyon using physics and math. You know what I mean? And so, like, people actually liked it.
Yeah, it changes it up. It makes it more personable, at least. And, like, kind of makes it a little more fun. Because people are interested in, like, learning. They just... you have to give it to them the right way.
Yeah.
Or you can kind of sit up there and be monotonous about it, but it's just so much better when you're...
Yeah. And, I mean, it definitely does take a special gift for teachers to be able to do that. You know, and at a certain point, they just don't care anymore.
Yeah.
You know, and it's really, really unfortunate. And as I was saying earlier, it's kind of, in honesty, like, part of the administration's fault mm-hmm. because the administration is what gives the job assignments. So they're going to, a principal says, you know, teacher A, you're going to teach the honor student, or tenured teacher, you're going to teach the honor students, new teacher, you're going to teach the remedial class. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And sorry, that got awkward.
Sorry.
It's okay. The tenured teachers are going to teach the honor students and the new teacher is going to teach the remedial students. And it's the principal that does that assignment. Yeah. It's the principal that does that assignment. Or the higher up district, that has negotiated with the
superintendent.
Yeah, superintendent or the head of curriculum or whoever else.
Somebody
that does
who's not
that.
Even there, who's not even there on the ground level.
And they know that that's what the teachers want. And the way they know that is because that is what the union has argued for them.
Yeah.
And that's what gets really tricky. It's like the union's good because they make sure that teachers are not overworked. Yeah, they're making sure we're taken care of.
We need to focus onto the
students,
though.
Exactly.
The students are really why everyone's there. Like, honestly, like, you know what? I love that you're a great teacher, but we always have to focus on the students. Students come first.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
You don't get into teaching for the money, for sure. You get into
teaching
for the students. You know? And that's the thing. It's like...
Well, I'm kind of also in it for the music.
Oh, well, yeah. As a music teacher, I'm sure. But Melissa,
fun.
I gotta tell you, it was fucking great having you on the podcast today. And I hope you can come back and do this again sometime.
All right.
because this was like one of my favorite podcasts so far, and every time it's like we really got covered a lot of ground today. But we got to end this because I have to use the restroom, and we're running over time.
Too much burp.
But thank you again for coming, and the person because we have to play music in between the breaks. You want to talk about?
I'm not sure which order Oliver played them in, but the instrumental track was Main Street Cinema. All of this is my boyfriend's music. He's actually a music educator too. So us music educators actually do play music as well. We don't just teach it, and we actually go out and create it as well. Use it in a practical, applied sense. The instrumental track is his band Main Street Cinema, and anyway, there's that one. And then there is the track by Dead in Alaska called "Birds with Human Legs." I believe that's what it's called. I'm terrible. I'm a terrible promoter. And then the last one, or another one that was input, was Love American. And that's the band he plays bass for. And the title of that track was Sink Your Teeth. And all really great stuff. I still love going to their shows. I still love getting into the crowd. It's awesome.
Maybe we can get him in here one time. We can kind of see what two music educators have to feel about it.
Oh, yeah. I would love that. I wanted him to come today, but he's like, I'm sleeping because I didn't get home till 5 because I was practicing with my two bands, and then we had a show, Gorilla Show, at 12:30 or something crazy.
Wow. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. Okay, yeah, we totally had to get
living the life.
I know.
It sounds like a rock star. Okay, cool. Well, thank you again for coming.
Thank you for having me.
This has been a fun podcast. All
right.
We'll see you guys on our next episode. We won't be having next episode till 2 weeks from now. I got some stuff I gotta take care of with this room, fixing up the studio a little bit more, but we will see you in 2 weeks. Like the flesh of our bones.